Lumber, and welcome to the WGDB Sports Break. Well, it's baseball time, and joining us for what we hope is one of many appearances is Jay Jaffe. Jay runs a baseball blog called Baseball Prospectus, and he has done just a terrific job of breaking down Major League Baseball locally and nationally. We're going to be hearing his thoughts on the Yankees and the Mets, plus some of the pennant races. The program is brought to you by Borelli's in East Meadow, serving great Italian food since 1955, and by Pitt Printing in Hicksville. Pitt Printing, the right people, the right printing. Back in just a moment with Jay Jaffe, coming up after these messages.
Pitt Printing and Document Services can create, print, and mail all of your important business documents, from direct mail to catalogs, brochures, sales materials, marketing collateral, and more. Pitt offers you the convenience of handling every aspect of your project so that you can save your company time and money. You can even edit, revise, and place your order online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one else can offer all of these services, plus PIP's outstanding customer service. PIP Printing and Document Services, your complete document services solution.
See Mark Saltzman at PIP Printing, 85 North Broadway in Hicksville. Telephone number 516-942-9500. Borelli's Restaurant in East Meadow has been doing business since 1955. When Borelli's first started, the Dodgers were in Brooklyn, the Giants were in Manhattan, and there were no New York Islanders, no Nassau Coliseum, or no New York Jets to train at Hofstra. When you're around that long at the same place, run by the same family, there has to be a reason. And the reason is a simple one. Borelli serves great Italian food with great service at affordable prices. Borelli's is located on Hempstead Turnpike, just east of the Meadowbrook Parkway. It's across from the Nassau Coliseum and right down the road from Adelphi University. If you haven't been to Borelli's, then what's taking you so long? Once you do get there, it won't be another half century before you go back. Borelli's on Hempstead Turnpike, just east of the Meadowbrook Parkway in East Meadow. Family owned and operated since 1955. Welcome back to the Sports Break. I'm Joel Blumberg, and hey, if I had a nominee for the greatest email address or the greatest website, this would be my guy. Jay Jaffe is our guest from Baseball Prospectus. I'm going to leave the laurels to you, Jay, because you had to come up with this. This is a great email address.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's called Futility Infielder, and it's a website I started 5 years ago. It was around the time that the Yankees were winning. I think it was the year they beat the Mets in the World Series 2000, and Luis Soho got the game-winning hit. And I'd always been sort of fascinated with Luis Soho and his type of player, because that was essentially what I was in Little League in high school. I was a futility infielder, a good field, no-hit guy who played a lot of positions, but didn't have a lot of hope.
See, when I was a baseball player, I identified with Paul Stuckey in the great song Right Field. That was me. And no field, no hit, that somebody had to take me, and I was put in the place where I could do the least amount of damage, and that's what all players with my ability, and if you know that folk song by Peter, Paul, and Mary, especially Paul Stuckey, called Right Field, that's my abilities as not only as a baseball player but as an athlete, which is why I got into broadcasting.
I hear you. I think I've certainly found a better spot within the game for myself here behind the keyboard.
Well, talk about the spot that you found yourself.
Well, let's see. I'm somebody who grew up following the game and kind of followed it all the way through high school. You know, almost religiously. Kind of lost a bit of contact with it in college. Really when I moved to New York City, I got back into baseball, mostly because I became pretty fascinated with watching, the Yankees, the Joe Torre dynasty unfold in front of my eyes. And I'd grown up hating the Yankees. I was a Dodger fan. I still am a Dodger fan. During the time when the Dodgers and the Yankees, you know, met in the World Series in 77 and 78. But I got drawn back into watching the Yankees because, you know, for once they were a likable team, with Joe Torre, you know, able to buffer the team and himself against, you know, the tirades of George Steinbrenner. And I found something very admirable about that. And this was the first time I'd ever been in a city where I could actually go to a big league ballpark. So I started going to Yankee games. And you know, I think the team, it took a long time for me to actually say, you know, that I was really a Yankee fan. But, you know, that's where I'm at now, although I try to remain objective about the true merits of the team. And I've gotten to be more analytical because I've gotten into the sort of the performance analysis side of things, which has taken me, you know, from Bill James back in the early 80s to Baseball Prospectus today.
And you know, everybody, it just seems these days, owes their homage to Bill James. And when you start thinking of the term Moneyball and you start thinking of the book Moneyball, there's an homage to Bill James. And also, when you look at general managers like Billy Beane and J.P. Riccardi, although the Blue Jays are spending a little bit more, I think Riccardi's with the Blue Jays, they're spending a little bit more money now. It all has that homage to statistics and numbers, and that's how Billy Beane operated.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of truth to that. And I think, you know, Bill James provided a lot of us with, you know, an analytical framework with which to view the game. That maybe, you know, took us away from the ups and downs of listening to, you know, what a player hit, you know, for that home run, and you know, the kind of the mythology that's perpetrated by the sports writers and by those within the games. And he really, you know, gave us the tools to think for ourselves about baseball, and I think that's really his most lasting legacy.
Jay, talk about your blog. Talk about what exactly Futility Infielder does do, and what you're, you know, and how you use it to analyze baseball and what's going on.
Okay, I started the website 5 years ago, and it was kind of a clearinghouse for just all the different kind of conversations that I was partaking in about baseball amongst my friends and within the internet baseball community, as centered around a couple of different websites like Baseball Prospectus and Baseball Primer. And basically, it's a combination of news analysis and opinion and personal history, and, you know, statistical analysis. And that's those are all areas that I enjoy writing about. You know, a lot of what I do is talking about, you know, the Yankees game that I watched or, you know, or that I went to. A lot of it is analyzing, you know, what's in the news in terms of broader trends, especially, you know, when the Dodgers hired Paul DePodesta, Billy Beane's former assistant general manager and a prominent character in Moneyball. I spent a lot of time exploring that and exploring the furor around Moneyball, the way it had polarized people inside and outside of the game. I do some annual statistical things, kind of rounding up, say, the Hall of Fame ballot, which I've now taken that over to Baseball Prospectus, and a few other things like that. I would look at the free agent market for pitching. You know, so I basically came to have you know, a lot of different you know, features that would more or less take me not only through the baseball season but year round. And I discovered an important truth, which is that if you provide consistent baseball content of high quality to fans in the off season, they will love you. So that's really, you know, one of the things that has been a big part of growing Futility Infielder. And while I've had to back off on the focus of it a little bit as I've gotten more involved in Baseball Prospectus, it's still, you know, near and dear to my heart.
Watching the Yankees, and I've got to qualify this by saying that this program, because I am out of town on the day it's being aired, this program is being recorded late last week, and some of the things we may say may be kind of a little outdated, but basically what we do in trying to analyze the Mets and Yankees, consider the analysis coming from a point where it is before their weekend series, respectively, the Yankees at home with the Baltimore Orioles and the New York Mets going out to San Diego on the West Coast. And let's try and break down both teams. First of all, in looking at the Yankee situation, they've been up and down, and it's April, and I think it's rather normal for the Yankees to be up and down. But the thing, if you're a Yankee fan, which obviously you are, Jay, we're talking with Jay Jaffe of Baseball Prospectus. They're a year older. They really haven't made that many significant changes. And in the world of statistics and in the world of performance based on statistics, does that help or does that hurt the Yankees right now?
That definitely hurts the Yankees. You know, they have a very old team. And while, you know, 1 through 7, they've got a lineup that is, you know, just about the equal of any in baseball history in terms of the laurels which those players bring to the table. They made some fundamental mistakes in the offseason, both with regards to filling the rest of their holes, let's stick with that for a moment. And an example I'll use is the decision to bring back Bernie Williams as their DH, their regular DH and fourth outfielder. And he's a guy whose career has been in severe decline over the last 3 years. And there's a lot of sentiment about Bernie Williams because he was part of those World Series teams. But, you know, he'd never played, or not since 1992 had he played positions other than center field. His defensive value is zero because he can't throw a ball across a room. And, you know, he doesn't produce enough to merit either a regular DH spot. So they made a really lazy move in signing him, to be this DH fourth outfielder.
It was almost like it was they let the dollar sign rule, rather than not.
Well, I think they let sentimentality rule more than anything else. They wanted to be nice to Bernie and to give him a farewell tour, which, you know, they really kind of gave him last year. But, you know, I mean, his contract at $2 million is kind of reasonable, but there's a lot of outfielders that can give you a lot more for $2 million than what Bernie Williams is currently capable of.
As for the Mets, they made some major changes, yet their pitching staff is, for the most part, essentially the same. I don't think they counted on Brian Bannister producing the way he was produced in the early part of the season. And I think they counted a lot on Steve Traxel, who's a year older, and Tom Glavine, who's just been pitching marvelously, but is a year older, and Pedro Martinez, who just continues to defy any sort of laws of pitching. What about the Mets? I know they got younger in their lineup. They got a great balance of youth and age in their lineup. But what about the pitching?
Well, the Mets made some good moves, but, you know, from my standpoint, I think they did a little too much to thin out their rotation by trading both Jay So and Chris Benson. I saw So as somebody who probably could have stepped in and given them, you know, been a perfectly acceptable fifth starter. I think he pitched about 70 innings last year, and he was fantastic. And while I wouldn't necessarily expect that kind of performance to stand up over the season, I think he would have been a darn bit better than Victor Zambrano, who it sounds like is nearing the end of his rope. I thought they also should have gone forward with moving Aaron Heilman into the rotation. But as it is, I mean, you know, Pedro looks great, and Tom Glavine is pitching better than he ever has as a Met. And those are two very inspiring glimpses, although, you know, it's too early to really get too wild about that. And like you said, Bannister is somebody who's shown them a lot in a brief period of time. And, you know, maybe, you know, I think he's certainly got the smarts to be a big league pitcher. Whether he has the stuff remains to be seen. But it's certainly interesting to see that their pitching is holding up so far.
They've left themselves, and in looking at the Mets pitching, and I agree with what you say about thinning out their rotation, but number one, if Duaner Sanchez is what he has shown to be in the beginning of the year, you got to say the Jay So deal was a major success.
Well, okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, you know, Duaner Sanchez definitely took a big step forward last year with the Dodgers. He suddenly became a very, very good strikeout pitcher. By the end of the year, he was closing games after Eric Gagne had gone down and after Yency Brazovan had proven himself not up to the task. So he's good, but, I mean, getting Jorge Julio for Chris Benson, I thought, was almost laughable. The comparison I made to Jorge Julio a couple weeks ago is that he's going to make Mets fans pine for the days of Mel Rojas.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about it. And even the later stages of Armando Benitez as well. I couldn't agree with you more there, Jay. But I think with the Mets in their rotation, and trust me, I'm not the world's greatest authority on this, they did leave themselves some versatility. If Zambrano and or Traxel do fail, as you said, they do have an Aaron Heilman that they could put into the starting lineup. He's got experience. I think more and more he wants to start. And the other problem was, I think the Mets would have won their division last year had they had a better bullpen. The bullpen lost it for them. You look at how many games they took leads in the seventh and eighth inning and did not win those games, and you got to turn around and say it's almost a knee-jerk reaction. If we got a hole in the bullpen, we have to do that, and sometimes you got to give away to get. I agree with you on the Benson trade, but I think Chris Benson was an underachiever as well. I don't know if he would have done it here in New York. I mean, obviously, it's with his wife. It's a totally dysfunctional relationship. You don't know how much
definitely.
It wears on him. You don't know how much it came to. And you know what? Maybe Jorge Julio is the best you can. It's not a great investment, but the truth of the matter is, In looking at Jorge Julio positively, he's a guy you could put in the lineup when you're down 10-1 and rest your other pitchers.
Absolutely. I think that's where you're going to see Jorge Julio getting his innings. And that's not a great value, but like you said, I think there were some definite legitimate reasons to trade Chris Benson, and that does include the level of distraction caused by his wife. I just think that I would like to have seen them get a better investment on that. But, you know, as you said, you know, they spent a lot of time focusing on rebuilding the bullpen, and I think that's a big deal. Where I think they should have spent a little bit more time was solving their problem at second base. They had a lot of options out there to replace Kaz Matsui, and they're trying to go from within, which I think is a good idea. But they should have done a better job of getting an insurance policy. And the guy I always think of who was available this spring was Tony Graffanino, who was playing for the Red Sox last year and is now in Kansas City.
Not to mention what a great clubhouse guy he is, too. Everything you hear about Tony Graffanino, and I being a Red Sox fan, really understand that he was such a plus in that clubhouse. It would have helped a great deal.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't find anybody who's got a bad word to say about Tony Graffanino. I mean, he's got his limitations as a player, but he's certainly, in the utility infielder scale, he's off the charts in terms of, what he can actually bring to the table for a ball club.
Jay, what teams do you like this year? Who do you see winning divisions? Who do you see stepping forward? Who do you see dropping back?
Okay, well, let's see. I think the Yankees probably can hold off the Red Sox in the AL East. That was my preseason assessment, based mostly on the fact that I think the Red Sox lineup has really lost a few big bats like Johnny Damon that they haven't. I mean, I like Coco Crisp a lot, but he's injured now. I think their infield, they're not going to get nearly as much production out of that as they have in the past. So I think the Yankees have the upper hand there, although that assessment was based before seeing that Curt Schilling was healthy.
Let me stop you right there, too. I think the joker in the deck in that prediction, if Jonathan Papelbon is the deal, while the Red Sox don't have the firepower in their lineup, they certainly have now the bullpen that can shut down games and win games. Again,
their pitching definitely looks a lot better than I think I had anticipated at the outset of the season. Let's see, moving along, I like the Indians in the AL Central. You know, they came on strong very late last year and almost took it away from the White Sox. And they've got a wonderful nucleus of young players that's really just starting to gel. I think the White Sox probably, you know, will give them a run for their money and have a pretty good shot at the wild card. But, you know, they've got to step out and prove it all over again that they're a great team. And let's see, over in the West, at the outset of the season, I kind of like the Angels, but I'm now, especially with Bartolo Colon, not so convinced that they're going to do anything major, and I think it's really, you know, the A's look great on paper. They've got a lot of depth in their rotation. They've solved a couple big problems with their offense in terms of, you know, bringing in Milton Bradley and Frank Thomas, and, you know, while the latter is kind of off to a bit of a cold start, I think he'll put some balls in the seats for them. So that's my take on the AL. Over in the National League, I think it's too early to say whether this is the Mets year or whether the Braves are finally going to give up the National League East crown. I've bet against the Braves before, and now I'm at the point where it's like I'm gonna stay on the Braves bus until it actually crashes, because until somebody proves to me that they can actually win the NL East, I'm not gonna believe it. I think the Mets have a shot at the wild card. I think in the Central, the Cardinals are probably still the class of that division, but they're not nearly as good as a team as they were last year when they won 100 games. I like the Brewers to maybe give them a chase for the wild card. I'm a big Brewer fan because my wife is from Milwaukee, and I've followed their rebuilding pretty closely. And out west, boy, you know, I'd like to see the Dodgers do it. I'm not sure they can do it with all the injuries they've got, and I think that division is really wide open in terms of all the injuries right now.
Jay, thanks for your time. Love having you on.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jay Jaffe of Baseball Prospectus. He'll be joining us throughout the season, giving his take on what's going on in baseball. We'll be hearing from him from now till the rest of the year. And we'll be talking with him actually more often during the month of September when the pennant races really get tight. Well, that wraps things up for this evening. Stay tuned in just a few moments for Silver Screen Audio. Our guest in the program will be Ken Weiss talking about motion picture serials. I'm Joel Blumberg. Thanks to Trevor in the booth. Our sponsors are Borelli's in East Meadow, serving great Italian food since 1955, and by PIP Printing, the right people, the right printing. Till next week, I'm Joel Blumberg. So long.